I could have just left you all up here because you are the next thing, and I can't introduce you better than you can introduce yourselves. Please welcome the social justice singers and presenters.
Good morning. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King spoke to the UUA General Assembly on May 18, 1966. This year found the civil rights movement in the United States struggling. James Meredith, a black civil rights leader, was shot. Congress turned back the 1966 civil rights bill. And white backlash to the black power movement was given as the reason for several election defeats. Sound familiar? I will read some excerpts from this speech that seem now so pertinent for us as UUAs in 2017, and I quote from Dr. King. "I would like to use as a subject the church remaining awake during a great revolution. I'm sure each of you has read that arresting little story from the pen of Washington Irving, entitled Rip Van Winkle. Well, one thing we usually remember about the story of Rip Van Winkle is he slept 20 years. But there is another point in that story which is almost always overlooked. It is the sign on the top of the inn of a little town on the Hudson River from which Rip went to the mountains for his long sleep. When he went up, the sign had a picture of George II of England. When he came down, the sign had a picture of George Washington, the first president of the United States. There is nothing more tragic than the sleep through a revolution. There could be no gainsaying that a social revolution is taking place in our world today." Dr. King goes on to talk about obligations of the church during that time. "It is necessary for the church to reaffirm over and over again the essential immorality of racial segregation. Any church which affirms the morality of racial segregation is sleeping through the revolution. I've heard it said a great deal that the time for demonstration is over. And this is something we hear a great deal. Well, I'm sorry. I can't agree with that. I wish I could say that the day of demonstration is over. But as long as I see these problems are with us, it will be necessary to demonstrate. In order to call attention to them, the church must support this kind of demonstration." So former UUA president and the current senior pastor of the First United Unitarian Church in Portland, William Sinkford, talked about this time in his sermon at the 2016 UUA General Assembly, 50 years after King's sermon. Reverend Sinkford urged Unitarian Universalists to see themselves, quote, "not as the already conscious, waiting for others to wake up, but as activists more willing to join Black Lives Matter protests, immigrant rights protests, as was mentioned today, and gay pride parades, and probably women's marches." He felt that UUs did not heed King's words and urged UUs generally, quote, "to not look away this time." Of the period mid-1960s till today regarding racial justice, Reverend Sinkford said, quote, "our faith looked away. We did not stay woke." He pointed, though, to a brighter future, saying, "resistance is what love looks like in the face of hate. Resistance is what love looks like in the face of violence." I'm going to read that again. "Resistance is what love looks like in the face of hate. Resistance is what love looks like in the face of violence." Reverend King also spoke out against the Vietnam War. On May 4, 1970, the Ohio National Guard troops fired on 25 Kent State University students who were protesting the U.S. escalating the war by entering Cambodia. 4 students were killed. In in Western Pennsylvania, a Presbyterian minister whose daughter was attending Kent State preached a sermon about this tragedy. He preached, and I quote, "For the soldiers to fire on the students at Kent State was to fire on freedom and to fire on truth." A year later, that minister and his family prepared to move to another congregation. He received this letter from the president of the city council that what he was leaving. "Dear Reverend, a number of the residents in this borough are sorry to see you leave, and the writer will be one of these. Your friendly approach and your tenderness to the sick and your warm sympathy to the bereaved, in my opinion, shows an exceptional ability which is not found in all members of your profession. Your sermons, according to my wife," yes, he didn't go to church, "are well planned and meaningful in thought and well arranged, and your diction is commendable. Your one fault, in this writer's opinion, is your thinking on the youth of today and demonstrations in the college campuses. The Sunday you preached on the Kent State riot did you more harm, and the criticism was widespread. It is all right to have your opinion in your thoughts if it's one of your beliefs, but why express them when you know us older generations still believe in law and order?" He goes on, "But sincerely, A.P. Craig, President of the Council." The minister who stayed awake and spoke out against this tragedy was my father, the Reverend J. Cyrus Smith. Reverend King ended his address to the General Assembly with words that are so familiar to us and provide encouragement even today. And after listening to these words, let's have a few moments of community silence reflecting on how we may stay awake to the injustices of today. The social justice singers will then end our silence with music. I'm quoting Reverend King. "We can sing, we shall overcome, because somehow we know that the arc of justice is long and bends toward justice. We can sing, in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, free at last." Let us enter into silence.
In Atlanta was busy preparing the order of service for Sunday, April 7th. The senior minister, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., had just called in the title of his sermon, "Why America May Go to Hell." At 6:05 p.m. that evening, MLK lay dead on the second floor balcony at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, struck down brutally by
an assassin's bullet. And in that moment, America did indeed take a step toward hell, perhaps the journey that we're still on. King was in Memphis in support of the sanitation workers' strike. He had focused on the need for economic equality and social justice. He hoped his work in Memphis would become a part of the Poor People's Campaign that he had planned for later in the spring. In the early 1960s, King began to articulate a broader view of his ministry beyond civil rights for black Americans. In 1962, he said, there are three major evils in our world today: the evil of war, the evil of economic injustice, the evil of racial injustice. Dr. Cornel West claims King's dream of a more free and democratic America and the world had morphed into, in King's own words, a nightmare, owing to the persistence of racism, poverty, militarism, and materialism. MLK was realizing the enormity of the insidious interconnectedness of these evils he saw in American society. A few days before his death, he was visiting his good friend Harry Belafonte, and he asked Belafonte, are we integrating into a burning house? King was realizing that America needed a fundamental change if we were to realize his dream of freedom and equality for all. In a 1966 speech to the Southern Christian Leadership Council staff, he said, there must be a better distribution of wealth, and maybe America must move toward a democratic socialism. 2016. There was a candidate speaking of democratic socialism. Later he said, I have found out that all I have been doing to correct this system in America has been in vain. I am trying to get at the roots of it to see just what ought to be done. King was becoming what Cornel West calls the radical king. The radical king, as we've already indicated, Jack indicated, spoke out against the Vietnam War. He decried rampant poverty in America, dominated by military spending and commercial materialism. He pointed to the widening gulf in the wealth of Americans and called for income equality. The Civil Rights Bill had passed in 1964, the Voting Rights in 1965, but fundamentally the condition of people of color and the poor had not changed. And King's positions and his rhetoric were not welcome in America. A Harris poll in May of 1967 found that 72% of whites and 55% of blacks disapproved of his opposition to the war in Vietnam and his efforts to eradicate poverty. I want to share with you several excerpts from one of MLK's last speeches, a speech to the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, given March 18, 1968, less than 3 weeks before he died. The speech is also known as the All Labor Has Dignity speech. And as you listen to King's own words, nearly 50 years ago, ask yourself, what has changed in America? King said, one day our society will come to respect the sanitation worker if it is to survive. For the person who picks up the garbage in the final analysis is as significant as the physician. For if he doesn't do his job, diseases are rampant. All labor has dignity. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. Do you know that most poor people in our country are working every day, and they are making wages so low they cannot begin to function in the mainstream of economic life of our nation? These are facts which must be seen, and it is criminal to have people working on a full-time basis and a full-time job getting part-time income. you are here to demand that Memphis and the nation will see the poor. You know, Jesus reminded us in a magnificent parable one day that a man went to hell because he didn't see the poor. His name was Dives. And there was a man by the name of Lazarus who came daily to Dives' gate in need of the basic necessities of life, and Dives didn't do anything about it. And he ended up going to hell. Dives went to hell because he allowed Lazarus to become invisible. Dives went to hell because he maximized the minimum and minimized the maximum. Dives went to hell because he was a conscientious objector in the war against poverty. It seems to me I can hear God of the universe saying, I was hungry and you fed me not. I was naked and you clothed me not. The children of my sons and daughters were in need of economic security, and you didn't provide it for them. And so you, America, cannot enter the kingdom of greatness. Now, you're doing something else here in Memphis. You're highlighting the economic issue. You're going beyond purely civil rights to questions of human rights. And let me just step out of King's words for a minute. This is the MLK that was there in 1968. This is the MLK that was killed. This is the MLK that was speaking far beyond civil rights. Again, King's words. We've fought the civil rights battle over the years. We've done many electrifying things. Now, all the things we have done were great movements. They did a great deal to end legal segregation and guarantee the right to vote. With Selma and the Voting Rights Bill, one era of our struggle came to a close and a new era came into being. Now our struggle is for genuine equality, which means economic equality. For we know that it isn't enough to integrate lunch counters. What does it profit a man to be able to eat at an integrated lunch counter if he doesn't earn enough money to be able to buy a hamburger and a cup of coffee? What does it profit a man to be able to eat at the swankiest integrated restaurant when he doesn't earn enough money to take his wife out to dine? What does it profit one to have access to the hotels of our city and the motels of our highway when we don't earn enough money to take our family on vacation? What does it profit one to be able to attend an integrated school when he doesn't earn enough money to buy his children's school clothes? And so we assemble here tonight, and you have assembled for more than 30 days now to say, we are tired. We are tired of being trampled over by the iron feet of oppression. We are tired of our children having to attend overcrowded, inferior, quality-less schools. We are tired of having to live in dilapidated sub-housing conditions where we don't have wall-to-wall carpeting, but so often end up with wall-to-wall rats and roaches. We are tired of smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of a affluent society. We are tired of walking the streets in search for jobs which do not exist. We are tired of working our hands off and laboring every day and not making an adequate wage to get the basic necessities of life. We are tired. And so in Memphis we have begun. We are saying, now is the time. Get the word across to everyone in power that now is the time for all of God's children. Now is the time for City Hall to take a position for what is just and honest. Now is the time for justice to roll down like water and the righteous like a mighty stream. Now is the time. Here ends the words of Dr. King. So I say to you, my sisters and brothers and siblings here at Wolf, now is the time. Paraphrasing a question posed by Cornel West, do we have the courage and capacity to hear and heed the radical King, or must we sanitize in order to evade and avoid his challenge? America is filled with hate and fear and evil this winter. Now is certainly the winter of our discontent. Rabbi Abraham Heschel, one of MLK's very dearest friends, often said, "Indifference to evil is more evil than evil itself." And so today, here in this sanctuary, I ask each of you, are you ready to tackle the evil before you? Because now is the time.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Jack. Thank us all for this wonderful semi-structured improv morning. We came here this morning not knowing how many would be in the seats, hoping that no one slipped and fell on the ice in the parking lot, so that we could come together in fellowship and talk about the now. The now that MLK urges us to pay attention to. What is it? What is it that we can do? How many decades have we been working towards this now? What can we do? What can I do? We can wear our safety pins, letting people know that we are safe to be with, to be around. It puts quite an obligation on us, though, if we're wearing a safety pin which says we're a safe person, it obligates us then to step up when we see injustice being done. It isn't enough to wear a pin. We can wear our Black Lives Matter to me buttons. We can march. We can demonstrate. But in our hearts, we must be ready to stand with those that we claim to be allies to. So we're going to talk a little bit this morning about what we can do as individuals. But before we do that, I want to share with you a couple of closing poems. Some of you who know me know that I'm pretty fond of poetry, and I use it a lot to make a point. We are surrounded this week, beginning this week, with incredible photography and poetry that is sympathetic to the Palestinian-Israeli struggle. Next Sunday we will have a sermon about that, that will be presented by the poet. And the following week, we will have a reception for this art exhibit. It's very provocative. It will bring to mind much of the struggle that we have been talking about this morning. It may not be in this country, but it is exactly what we're talking about. And so I want to close with a poet from one of my very favorite poets, William Stafford, who would be celebrating now his 102nd birthday. Martin Luther King is born on the 15th of January. William Stafford was born on the 17th of January. They have always gone together in my mind, because Stafford was a conscientious objector, lifelong conscientious objector. He was an ordinary person. And that's what we want to talk about now. We want to talk about what we as ordinary people, not the hero that MLK was, not John Lewis, not Barack Obama, not what did they do, what did we do, and what will we do? What will we do? Stafford answers that question in this poem, one of his better known poems, actually, called Serving with Gideon. Now I remember, in our town, the druggist prescribes Coca-Cola mostly, in tapered glasses to us, and to the elevator man in a paper cup, so he could drink it elsewhere because he was black. And now I remember the Legion gambling in the back room, and no women but girls, old boys who ran the town. They were generous to their sons or the sons of friends. And of course, I was almost one. I remember winter light closing its great blue fist slowly eastward along the street, and the dark then, deep as war, arched over a radio show called The 30s in the great old USA. Look down, stars. I was almost one of the boys. My mother was folding her handkerchief. The library seethed and sparked. Right and wrong arced. And carefully, carefully, I walked with my cup toward the elevator man. Do we dare to walk with our cup toward the elevator man? Will we stand up? Will we move in, lean in, and join with? Let us begin to overcome. Before we move into the audience participation part of this, let us stand together, hold hands, and sing loud, We Shall Overcome.
We have time for comments, questions, and discussion. I'll bring the mic around to anybody with their hand up.
My name is Suzanne Riles, and I want to remember today Gwen Ifill, my favorite television commentator, a black woman. And there have been so many black women lately on TV who I very much credit with their perspective. I'm so grateful to them. Particularly these black women, for their commentary. I find it awfully valid and uplifting, usually with a note of joy somehow tucked in.
Hi, I'm Don Merrick, and just a couple of thoughts. First of all, thanks for this tribute. This was really important to do, and I really appreciate the nudge to get out there and be proactive continuously. I wanted to mention one other thought that really moved me by MLK, and I didn't learn about it until probably 2 decades after he gave it, and it happened to be exactly 1 year before his death, April 4th, 1967, Riverside Church. He had a strong condemnation of the Vietnam War and what was happening there, and the body bags that were coming home. And after he gave that speech, he was highly condemned. And I really never got awareness of it till about 2 decades later at another UU fellowship that I attended. And it probably moved me more than any of the other speeches that he had the guts to do that and take all the criticisms he got. Thank you for the service.
I'm John Riles, and I wanted to point out that UUs have been very integrated into the civil rights movement over the years. In fact, some UUs actually gave their lives in that struggle. But there's so much we can do today. Just all around us, there are opportunities. For instance, this afternoon over at Southminster Presbyterian Church in Beaverton, they're having a commemorative service there that many of us have attended before. It's a wonderful opportunity to meet with others. Tuesday night, a couple of Tuesday nights a month, there are race talks over in North Portland that some of us attend as well. And there's just multitudes of opportunities. If you are interested in being involved, stop by the social justice table downstairs, and I think we can help you find some ways.
Thanks, guys. I find myself at times like this searching. You know, Salima says, what will we do? Patrick says, you know, something about standing up. Today I'm thinking a lot about love. How is it that we will, using a phrase, stand on the side of love and advocate for the things that Martin Luther King was advocating for? So many paths lead to what Rebecca was talking about, those weights. So many paths we can take lead to fear, lead to hatred. I find myself searching, how is it that we can find love and how we communicate with each other, how we act toward one another? How can I do that? It's not always easy to see.
Speaking of opportunities, also this afternoon from 3 to 5 at the First United Church of Christ in downtown, they're having an interfaith sanctuary assembly for immigrant justice. And it's for people in faith communities to get involved in what can you do to support immigrant justice. First United Church of Christ in downtown, 3 to 5. First Christian Church.
Good morning, all. I just got here late. I walked. I didn't want to drive. So I missed most of the service. Anyhow, I just wanted, I don't know if I have permission for this, but I just wanted to invite you all, if possible, to come and join us. We are going to have a march in defiance of the new administration and to demand Hillsboro to be declared a sanctuary city. We are going to do this march. We're going to start at 5 o'clock. It starts at 5 o'clock, departing from Shute Park in Hillsboro. So if any of you could attend, that would be just wonderful. Thank you.
What day, Edith?
Oh, Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yes, Tuesday at 5 o'clock. We are also going to honor Martin Luther King as we are doing that.
I want to just slip in a comment of my own. I was really struck by the statistics of, 72% of whites and 55% of blacks, did you say, were opposed to Martin Luther King. And it just made me reflect. I was born in 1967, and as far as I know, Martin Luther King was always a hero. And it made me reflect. It's encouraging to see that who's in the majority at the time doesn't tell you anything about who will eventually be, how history will feed that person or those people or that conflict.
Thanks, Kim. That actually makes me think of, my husband and I have been talking a bit about MLK because of the articles in the recent UU magazine. And one point was brought up, what would he be if he had not been martyred? Would he be the hero that he is today? I've been racking my brain this service trying to think of somebody since Martin Luther King Jr. Any leader, perhaps Barack Obama, to take that mantle on, but absent martyrdom, do we have a single figure? If anybody can think of any, please shout it out or come find me after the service. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, there are at least two that come to my mind. One of them is Dr. Cornel West. A little bit different focus than King had, but phenomenal speaker, philosopher, university professor. So that's one I would think of, and I'm trying to remember the name of the other one. The Reverend Dr. William Barber II is probably the most outspoken human rights leader in America today, and he's featured prominently with the UUs, even though he is a Baptist minister, and he has what he calls the moral majority, and they work on what he's calling Moral Mondays, and maybe even more significant than that, he has organized a national campaign around what's known as fusion, and it's the realization that racial justice and economic justice and immigrant justice and justice for women and reproductive rights and sexual orientation and income inequality, and that all of these factors do not operate individually. They operate all together. And so Barber is trying to call together a national movement, fusion movement, to advance this entire cause. He and 200 other members of the cloth have petitioned Donald Trump to sit with them before the inauguration to talk about how they're viewing the direction of the rhetoric that Mr. Trump is using and the direction of the candidates that he's selecting. He has refused to meet with them. That movement may well be the thing that spearheads much of the resistance that may happen in this country over the next few years. John Lewis certainly is a person, whether he's leading. John Lewis is probably one of those that could say, I am tired. Mm-hmm. I am tired. And it is time.
So taking this a little further, I just want to close with this reminder to if those of you that watch TV, commercial TV, and those of you that watch the commercials, take notice of a commercial by Amazon that is just delightful. It is a Muslim imam and a Catholic priest sitting together, laughing, joking, getting up. They are of a certain age, both of them. They are getting up and their knees creak. And as they go about their business, they think, and they both get in touch with Amazon, and each of them gets knee pads so they can pray as they pray. And it's just the most delightful, beautiful commercial I have seen in ages.
Before we close, I wonder if the Social Justice Committee would just stand and let us thank you.